The subject matter for this hour gets right to the very name of this program and radio station. We started calling ourselves Jefferson Public Radio when we powered up transmitters on both sides of the state line in the area once proposed as a separate state of Jefferson. It is not an endorsement of secession, just a convenient handle for the region we serve. The state of Jefferson idea is an old one that never seems to go completely away, and historians and archaeologists spend a fair amount of time and energy researching the idea. In fact, the Oregon Historical Society just renamed a single issue of what's usually called the Oregon Historical Quarterly. This time, it's the Jefferson Historical Quarterly. Our monthly underground history segment taps the expertise of the people at SULA, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Chelsea Rose is back in the studio with me once again from SULA. Chelsea, always good to see you.
Hi, great to be here.
And on the phone, Eliza Canty Jones, who is the director of community engagement for the Oregon Historical Foundation and the editor of what is usually the Oregon Historical Quarterly. Eliza, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
And from the other side of the state line, the other end of the state of Jefferson, Trudy Vaughn is an archaeologist and a historian from Reading. Trudy, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, Eliza, let's start with you. This is an unusual step. Have you ever renamed the Oregon Historical Quarterly something else before?
Not that I'm aware of. The quarterly has been published continuously by the Oregon Historical Society since 1900. It did have a little bit different name in its early years, but always Oregon, never Jefferson before this issue.
How much do people in the rest of the state of Oregon, I'm curious, even know about the state of Jefferson and the concept?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I think that there is definitely, as you noted in the introduction, people get some information about it with the actions that are advocating for secession and that kind of thing. But I don't know that folks know really the deep history of it, that it really is 160 years that folks in the region have at least been using that name or a different name as sort of a shorthand to identify themselves in the area as somewhat separate from the individual states.
Now, Trudy Vaughn in Reading, I mean, there are lots of people who've moved into the so-called state of Jefferson, obviously, because a lot of transplants from other parts of the region. I just wonder how much people within the area tend to know about the concept.
Well, I'm kind of surprised when I've been talking to people about my involvement with this State of Jefferson Historical Group. I assumed most people around here would have heard about it from the newspapers and the State of Jefferson secession folks, and it's surprising. So many people say, what is this? And I have to explain. So, like I say, I'm kind of surprised more people don't know about it.
Is there any single point to which we can trace the idea of the state of Jefferson? 160 years, Eliza just mentioned. So is there something, some first reference that is obvious to us?
Oh, gosh. I wish our prime state of Jefferson historian, Jeff LaLand, were on our panel today. Here from his article, it began in 1852. There was a proposal for a new state of Shasta. And the general, way back then, and I suppose even sometime today, the people in Northern California don't feel like they're getting a fair shake from the government in Sacramento, that all the money is going to the larger population centers. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for Southern Oregon, and they're feeling about getting a fair shake from Salem. So it does go back a long ways.
Interesting to think that it's 1852, because that's before a lot of white settlement in the Rogue Valley itself, so way, way back. We mentioned the State of Jefferson Historical Group, and Chelsea, when you got into the room, you were telling me about the evolution of this. You actually had your 41st annual meeting last month, so this is a long-time project.
It is, and Trudy's been involved for a very long time, too, and it's a really great way. We love it because it's a great way to network with archaeologists, historians, librarians, all sorts of folks that are doing work across the state of Jefferson, and just share research. And it's a pretty informal, but it is also a professional conference that students go to and stuff like that. But you hear all the cool work that's happening across the region, and there is no political agenda, but over time, it's it's been harder to kind of separate out what we're interested in from some of the more political State of Jefferson rhetoric that's coming out right now.
And in fact, you were saying that just trying to reserve a space to hold the conference as a State of Jefferson whatevers drew at least some raised eyebrows.
Yeah, it's been getting trickier. And so that was another reason why we were really excited to have this journal come out, so that there's an opportunity to educate people that there's a lot more to the story. You know, and of course, I remind people Jefferson Public Radio, you know, that's not that's not something that's advocating for a political outcome necessarily. So, yeah, I think it's a great way to introduce all the different things that come into this. And for me, it's not only professional, but it's personal. I've spent the majority of my life in Lassen, Coos, or Jackson County. And my dad is a Lassen County libertarian and my mom's a hippie. So I'm a true product of the State of Jefferson. So, you know, it's a really cool history due to the unique cultural and geography of the region, you know.
Well, the family background aside, though, I mean, did your parents ever talk about the State of Jefferson, the concept, while you were at home?
Well, you know, it's been on the ballot, you know, throughout my life over the years. You know, they'd in Lassen County, I think in the 70s it was on. It's been on up here. So it's the conversation about secession has been, you know, around throughout my life. But I think also, more importantly, I've seen firsthand and experienced firsthand some of the issues with access. And, you know, we're really resource rich, but that tends to, you know, a lot of the extractive industries benefit outside of the region and not necessarily the communities that contain these resources.
So the stuff gets shipped elsewhere and makes money for people who live elsewhere.
Yeah.
Trudy Vaughn, the reference that that Chelsea just made to some votes, in fact, there have been some fairly recent votes to secede from California in the likes of Modoc and Siskiyou County, but not specifically to start up State of Jefferson. And I wonder, has that been a fairly steady trend through the years?
Well, there seems to have been a resurgence in the last several, maybe 4 or 5 years. I mean, driving around Reading, you see signs. Again, I think it's people being upset with not getting enough funding and support from Sacramento.
And on the Oregon side, from Salem, yeah.
Right. To add to what Chelsea was saying, when our historical group started in 1976, it was some Forest Service and BLM archaeologists from Southern Oregon and Northern California happened to get together and started talking about that they really ought to meet regularly and share ideas, because there's a Society for California Archaeology, there's an Oregon Archaeological Society, and we all have our annual meetings, but Northern California is way more like Southern Oregon than it is like Southern California. So in terms of the geography and the culture and the environment and the topography, and even among archaeologists, things like obsidian sources. Where did the Native Americans get their obsidian? And they crossed the state line. And the trails, so many of our trails into California came through Oregon. So it's just a wonderful way to share ideas.
We're talking about the State of Jefferson concept in our monthly Underground History segment. That was Trudy Vaughn, who's an archaeologist and historian from Reading. We also have with us Eliza Canty Jones, who is the editor of the Oregon Historical Quarterly, which for one issue only is renamed the Jefferson Historical Quarterly. Chelsea Rose is our usual guide to what goes on in underground history in the region from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Your phone calls and emails are welcome. Thoughts about the history of the State of Jefferson and how it's explored and how we talk about it. 800-838-3760 to join in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Eliza, I know there's a long history around the country. We talked to an author a couple of years ago who had a book out called Lost States, of which Jefferson was just one. There was also a Franklin envisioned in western North Carolina and a couple of other portions of other states, things like that. So are there other parts of Oregon that have talked about this that you're aware of at the Oregon Historical Society?
You know, there are definitely some of those conversations that come up. Folks talk about Cascadia as a particular region, which extends far beyond Oregon. But I think for us, what was so interesting about the meeting that Chelsea and Trudy are talking about is really that sharing of knowledge about the history of the region and that sharing of knowledge about the culture of the region and folks getting together to try and really look at this smaller part of Oregon and part of Washington as well and share that knowledge and understand what's been happening there for thousands of years, what's been happening there more recently. And so for us, really, the opportunity was to get to know a part of Oregon much better than we would normally have the opportunity to get to know in a single issue of the Quarterly. So I would say if there are other meetings like the State of Jefferson Historical Group that are happening around Oregon where folks are sharing this kind of information and doing these kinds of conferences, we would love to know about them and come and participate as well.
So, Chelsea, are you aware of any similar groups, any pairings of Eastern Oregon and Idaho or anything like that where they wanted to make their own state?
Well, there's the Great Basin Archaeological Society, and they have a conference, too, and that covers several states and Cascadia. But I think that the State of Jefferson is kind of a little bit unique in how active it is, more that, you know, how much people have envisioned what it would look like and where it is. And you know, like Trudy was saying, we really can track something unique back in the archaeological record, you know, because of the unique geology and all the mountain ranges and stuff, that it has affected human behavior and culture going back. It's not just a modern phenomenon.
That was the next question. It was, yeah. I mean, we tend to think of the State of Jefferson as a construct of white people who came and settled the region in the 1840s, 1850s. But I wonder if there's any sort of pre-white people, some native identification of a region that comprised this area with the Siskiyou Mountains in the middle.
I'm sure, you know, the political boundary that separates Oregon and California is arbitrary.
It's so, a straight line, which, yeah.
And, you know, people have been, you know, we can see the way trade flowed back, you know, in the early days with, you know, like Trudy was saying, like obsidian sources and stuff. So we know that this region had, you know, it wasn't divided like it is today. And even in the gold rush in the early days, people that were mining here, you know, there's a lot of stories about when the tax man from California would come, no, we're in Oregon. When the Oregon tax man would come, no, we're in Washington. So people would really try to take advantage of the ambiguity of the mountainy border. And even today, if you're on the Applegate, you can be in California and not even realize it. You know, it's still not 100% clear where this line is.
Hey, well, in fact, I got a contact after we talked to some people who lived way up in the Applegate Valley, and I said they live on the Oregon side, and they said, well, actually, we live on the California. So these people emailed me, and they said, no, we live on the California side, but we called Siskiyou County, and we called the post office, and they said, just get yourself an Oregon address. Everything will be easier. So, Trudy, are there stories of the lines getting kind of blurred over time? I mean, were people, even without the State of Jefferson, they might have preferred to live in either Oregon or California, depending on which one they didn't live in?
Oh, I don't. I can't answer that question, but I'm sure there were.
All right, let's take a phone call. We have Bill in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the State of Jefferson in concept and as historical exploration target. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good morning. From a cultural standpoint and a romantic standpoint and historical and all that kind of stuff, it seems like a fun idea. But let's look at the practical political consequences of it. You start a new state like that, it's going to be conservative, of course. The majority of the people are going to be conservative, so you're going to get two new Republican senators and another Republican congressman, another Greg Walden. Do we really want that? So let's look at the practical aspects of this. It's a poor idea.
All right. Thank you for that, Bill. Appreciate that. I think I can hear where Bill's coming from on the political spectrum there. Eliza Canty Jones, it was very clear in the introduction to the Jefferson Historical Quarterly, which, again, is a one-time-only renaming of the Oregon Historical Quarterly, that this is not meant to be any sort of political statement.
No, of course not. That's not the role of the Oregon Historical Society. I mean, we really are, you know, it's our job to bring good history to the people of Oregon and to researchers and scholars from around the country and around the world. But it's not our job to make some sort of political statement. And I hope that comes through in the issue. We wanted to honor the work of people like Chelsea and Trudy and all of the other folks who are preserving the history, who are talking about the history, who are interpreting the history. And we wanted to bring attention to the history of a part of Oregon that doesn't receive as much attention in the Quarterly as we would like.
And why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a really excellent question. I think if I could answer why we don't get as much rural history as we would like, we would already have more of it. But I think, you know, where the population centers are often get more attention from historians. And I don't know, there are, we think about this a lot at the Oregon Historical Society because the entire state is our purview. And how do we make sure that we're including the entire state in the work that we do? And there are these really heavy gravitational pulls on stories like Lewis and Clark or the Oregon Trail or the World War II transformation of Portland.
All roads lead to Portland in those stories.
Yeah, yeah. They're really significant, important stories in Oregon history, but it's our job to also make sure that we're pulling out of that and looking at the other significant stories that are happening in the state and the other ways that history is happening in the state. So my hope is certainly that doing an issue like this will also send the message that we value history from around the state and we want to bring that to readers and bring that to the public, just as much as anything else that we do.
There is certainly the gravity of Portland, but there's also the fact that the Oregon Historical Society is reasonably well-financed and tightly run, where you've got the regional historical societies that, well, with Southern Oregon Historical Society as society as a prime example, lost its funding from tax money several years ago and has really been sort of bumping along on ties for years now. So is that a situation that does affect some of the outlying historical societies generally, that they just don't kind of have the funds to raise the visibility of their regions?
Yeah, I think that is a challenge. I mean, it's the historical societies, but also the universities. I mean, you can't discount the amazing work of SULA at Southern Oregon University. And, you know, when you have academics and scholars who are doing work in their local communities and working with local partnerships. I mean, the work that SULA does with tribal communities and with private landowners down in Southern Oregon, that's building a really significant body of scholarship and knowledge about the region. So I think it's, you know, the problems with funding for Southern Oregon Historical Society are a problem for the whole state. That's not just a problem for the region. That's a loss for all of us to not have that stable funding happening there. And that's the kind of thing that I think all of us in the historical community are looking at. How do we solve that? And I don't know the answers to that problems, but I think it's a challenge for all of us. But where you have strong universities, that makes a big difference too, and having those local relationships that are built up by Chelsea and her colleagues over years and over time, that makes a big difference, and it's important to support that.
I should point out that this Underground History segment does not have Mark Tveskov. He's on his honeymoon.
That's right.
That's why Chelsea Rose is the only rep from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Eliza Canty Jones, you just heard, is Director of Community Engagement at the Oregon Historical Foundation and the editor of what's normally called the Oregon Historical Quarterly. This time around it's called the Jefferson Historical Quarterly. Trudy Vaughn is an archaeologist and historian from Reading. We'll continue this conversation for several more minutes, so join in to talk about the State of Jefferson concept and how it is explored and how it is portrayed through history. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The reference that Eliza was making to the work you do at SULA, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, I mean, is this sort of an outsized kind of thing for Southern Oregon University to have something this well-entrenched and active?
A lot of universities have on-campus archaeological firms. And so, you know, the University of Oregon has one as well. But I think because we, you know, it's a pretty small region, you know, it's we've been, our work has been making a big difference. You know, I think it's been good. And this, I'm sad Mark's not here because this topic is near and dear to our hearts. And again, not for political reasons, but because we really love the opportunity. We think this is a great lens to try to tell the stories of these rural communities without, from a different perspective than from the, you know, scholar from Willamette Valley looking in, because we think that there's, you know, that there's a lot of nuance that's lost if you don't live in these smaller towns and communities. And for example, one of the articles we have in here is on a site in Powers, Oregon, along the South Fork Coquille River. And we were really excited to be able to tell that story. And we really fought to tell it in the way we really wanted to, which was that the timber industry that came through, which tends to overshadow the history of that region, wasn't the only interesting thing that there was to say about that community. And we really wanted to tell that story in a different way. And so we think that that's part of the value of taking a minute to focus on this topic, again, is to, you know, you know, shift the perspective a little bit so that these Southern Oregon and Northern California, these rural community stories that are different from those in the Willamette Valley or in the Sacramento Valley, that they can be told.
So in a sense, the Jefferson construct works for you, too, because you're dealing with a region that is that far from the state capitals of Salem and Sacramento and somewhat forgotten by them and perhaps a little undernoticed in terms of historical research.
And misrepresented. They tend to think the only thing interesting that ever happened here, and when I say they, I'm generalizing, of course, but is the timber industry or these big boom and bust extractive industries that came in, and this is the very thing that this frustration from the state of Jefferson really centers on, is they came in, they took all the trees, they took all the money, and they left, and then these communities, you know, but they tend to stop, or some history books tend to think that that's the only thing interesting that happens down here, and we wanted to say, no, actually, there's interesting stuff that happens before and after. It's not all about what Willamette Valley or the Sacramento Valley, what their stake in this region is.
Does each thing that you explore from the laboratory tend to lead to the next? I mean, when you're exploring Fort Lane, does that then lead you off to look for the Battle of Hungry Hill? Does that then lead you off to look for communities on the coast, that sort of thing?
Yes, and that's one of the other reason why the State of Jefferson Historical Group is so great, is because those of us that have been working in this region for so long, there are so many connections, and the story really builds in a way that allows us to tell the story in a meaningful way. But even aside from the regional connections, one of the interesting things, again, this story we wrote that's about Civil War refugees that end up in the mountains above in Coos County, we found out that one of the reasons they were pushed out of North Carolina and Tennessee was the Stoneman Raids, the famous ones of the Night They Drove Dixie Down song.
Mm-hmm.
And Colonel Stoneman learned how to do that scorched earth techniques in the Rogue River War on the Coquille River in Oregon. And so there's these connections across the United States, too, that we're starting to see that are really cool.
Fascinating stories of history in the state of Jefferson, history and archaeology. We'll continue the discussion here on Underground History with Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, Eliza Canty Jones from the Oregon Historical Foundation, and Trudy Vaughn, archaeologist and historian from Reading. We'll come back and continue the discussion on the Jefferson Exchange and take more phone calls and emails from you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're spending this hour in an expanded version of our monthly Underground History segment, which is co-hosted by the folks at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Of our usual crew of two, we have Chelsea Rose this time, which is great. Mark Tveskov, congratulations and happy honeymoon to you. Eliza Canty Jones is with us on the phone. She's the Director of Community Engagement for the Oregon Historical Foundation and the editor of what is usually called the Oregon Historical Quarterly. Just this time only, it's called the Jefferson Historical Quarterly to focus attention on the state of Jefferson and the State of Jefferson Historical Group. Trudy Vaughn is a longtime archaeologist and historian from Reading on the line with us. You can join the conversation. And again, this is about history and research about the area in which we live and not necessarily the real political part of it, but join the conversation with your thoughts. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Call from Paul in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hi.
So I was born in Mount Shasta, lived in Siskiyou County most of my life, and I now live in southwest Medford. I've always enjoyed living in this beautiful part of the world, and I've lived in a community that's been very much impacted by changes over time. And I think the state of Jefferson is really a bad idea in terms of we get played upon and make decisions that in the long run I think we would be making decisions based on manipulation by people similar to Donald Trump, appealing to our fears, and then not really, and that our environment will, the very thing we love is going to be taken advantage of by vested interests.
All right.
About law games, et cetera.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Paul. Appreciate that. So it always does tend to get better. Yeah, go ahead, Trudy.
Well, I thought you might be interested in knowing where the name the State of Jefferson came from.
Yes, please. There's always some dispute about whether it's Thomas or Jefferson Davis.
Okay. Well, the name Jefferson didn't happen until 1941.
Ah.
And before that, there had been several suggested names, Klamath, Jackson, Shasta, Someone even suggested discontent.
The state of discontent.
Yes. But my favorite was Middle West Coastia. And they were going to spell middle, M-I-T-T-E-L.
Ah, okay.
But anyway, there was a contest in 1941 for a name of the state. It was advertised in the Siskiyou Daily News, and they were going to give a cash award of $2 to the winner. And as you said, some think the state was named for Jefferson Davis of the Confederacy, who certainly believed in secession.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually named for Thomas Jefferson, the third president. And the winner of the contest said that it was through Jefferson's foresight that the Lewis and Clark expedition was organized and sent to explore the new Oregon country. And it was that expedition that actually saved this part of the area as part of the United States. So that is where the name comes from.
So it's interesting to know that the idea was there long before the name was then. In fact, as you pointed out, about 100 years before somebody applied the state of Jefferson to the concept. How serious was that 1941 campaign? I mean, obviously they got some newsreel coverage. It all looks very cute and funny with the roadblocks at the state line. You're now entering the state of Jefferson. And of course, the longstanding story is that Pearl Harbor happened, and that was the end of that discussion.
Right.
So how serious was that 1941 group, or was it really just sort of a tongue-in-cheek tourism thing?
No, they were serious, mm-hmm. at least from my reading, and I think if Pearl Harbor hadn't happened, I'm not sure we would have ended up with a separate state, but the fight would have continued, I think, and it would have been interesting to see what would have happened. No, it was definitely a serious. These people were serious about what they were doing.
Well, I can imagine the Depression in the years leading up to 1941 would have certainly exacerbated any feelings of discontent.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let us talk about some of the topics. Again, there is a State of Jefferson Historical Group that held its 41st annual meeting about a month ago, this time at the Wind River Casino in Redding. I want to ask about a couple of bits of research that were presented there, including the work of Joanne Mack from Notre Dame. Tell us about her work, Chelsea.
She's been doing work for a long time in the Klamath River area and looking at obsidian sources from across the region. And because she's been working in the state of Jefferson for so many years, she's really amassed a large body of information and data that is helping to better understand trade routes and obsidian sources and the people that lived there and what their lives were like, how they successfully lived in that area. And it's a beautiful area to live, so it's not surprising that it has a deep history.
And Trudy, I wanted to come to talk to you about one of your presentations here, about the parking lot gamble, the reprise of 1999 excavations at the Wind River Casino, where you were giving this presentation. What did those excavations uncover?
Well, this was back in 1999, and the Wind River Casino wanted to expand their parking lot. It was a smaller casino than what they currently have today. But they wanted to expand the parking lot, and someone had, when they graded the area, someone had seen some basalt flakes and a pestle and a possible cultural material. So they called me to take a look at it, and we did some test excavation to see if there was anything subsurface. And lo and behold, we found some human burials. And so we did not disturb the burials. We respected the burials. But it was very interesting because there were Euro-American artifacts buried with these Native American individuals, and across the creek, just a short distance away, was an historic stage stop. This, we're talking 1850s, 1860s, and the hypothesis is that these people, the Native Americans that were living on one side of the creek, were working for the owners of the stage stop and acquired these items. So we exposed several burials, and then the Wind River folks told us to stop in the Wintu tribe, and that area has now been designated a small memorial park. It's right there at Wind River Casino, and they didn't get their expanded parking lot.
Wow, okay. I want to come back to Chelsea to ask about, you know, the Siskiyous form something of a natural barrier between the modern states of California and Oregon, and I have to believe as a physical barrier they were probably significant back in Native American times too. But from what you've been able to figure out by coordinating with various other archaeologists and historians around the region, was there a fair amount of traffic and trade across the mountains?
Sure, there was. And one of the interesting things that really shows you, you know, how difficult it is to access, that the main routes in and out of the Rogue Valley are essentially the exact same routes they are today. And, you know, where I-5 goes and where 66 goes, you know, 66 is the Applegate Trail, mm-hmm. and where I-5 goes north and south is built on Native American trails that then are transformed into pack trails, then wagon trails, and then to the modern roads. So people, you know, the people that moved here, the Euro-Americans that came in, took advantage of these established trade routes that the Native Americans had been using for hundreds of years to access different parts of the region. So...
is there any real, like, missing link of information for archaeologists in the region? Any place where you have some questions about where people lived and where they moved and traded and interrelations between groups that you still haven't quite gotten to?
Well, I would say that there is so much left to learn. We're not even close to fully understanding the historic era, let alone the Native American period that spans back. You know, the time frame is going back farther and farther all the time with how long people have been in this region. And so I think that there's lots of exciting stuff to come forward. And this area is really unique in how it was I'm not a geologist, but how it was impacted by the last ice age. And now there's studies that show that humans were here before the Clovis period, which is 12. So who knows what there's left to uncover with the deep history in this region. And I look forward to, you know, people, you know, getting into that. My period of expertise doesn't go back quite that far, but I think there's always more to look at. And I think that, you know, again, the state of Jefferson, the topic is not a political one for us as archaeologists and historians. It's more of a research filter that allows us to think about things in a different way and to not let this political boundary interfere with good scholarship. Because a lot of times we do a literature review and we read everybody that's doing stuff in Oregon, and people don't tend to look at the stuff that might be 15, 20 miles away that obviously is really linked, you know, with the Native American tribes that are still active down there or the history. So to think about it in, you know, a broader lens, I think is a really important way to approach the history of this region.
Not stopping at the actual current
yes.
state line is
mm-hmm.
the whole point of having a State of Jefferson Historical
yep.
Group. And I wonder, Eliza Canty Jones at the Oregon Historical Quarterly for this time around, the Jefferson Historical Quarterly, given all the stories we've heard in this portion of the hour so far, I mean, it must have been tricky to figure out what you were going to put into the quarterly.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work that we make authors do to get published in the quarterly, and Chelsea can attest to that.
Yes.
So our journal is a peer-reviewed journal, so we have outside peer reviewers who read the manuscripts sometimes more than once, and we put authors through revision and all kinds of things. So it's oftentimes it's really a self-selecting group of the folks who are willing to go through that whole process. And we do that because we think we come out with a better product for our readers and for researchers in the end. And so I think it was, you have to be really dedicated to the work that you're doing to go through the process of getting it published in OHQ. And of course, we have the benefit of knowing and working closely with Mark and Chelsea for many years. Mark served on the OHQ Editorial Advisory Board, and Chelsea's a current member of the board now. So we're able to work with folks who know the OHQ really well, and we're able to think with us about what would be good fits for this special issue.
What kinds of responses have you gotten to calling the OHQ the JHQ just this one time, the Jefferson Historical Quarterly? I mean, I wonder if people were calling you up saying, hey, where's my issue?
No, we get not nearly enough responses as we would like from readers, but so far the responses we've gotten are ones of delight at seeing the cover come in, and it makes people smile, and then they're you know, we get more responses that they say they've loved the content, but also that the cover gave them a chuckle and they were glad to see it.
Let's talk about that cover, because there's a whole bunch of tobacco cans and tin cigar boxes and that sort of thing. Sir Walter Raleigh in a can and union leader and all that stuff. What is all this about?
This is the Jim Rock Can Collection, and this is a collection that was created by Jim Rock, who is an archaeologist working in the state of Jefferson for many years, and he recognized the value of this material culture as a way to help us understand broader aspects of history based on where these cans may have been found. And he developed this collection, and he took it all around the state of Jefferson and around the country, I believe, and showed it off and did a ton of research about these cans. There are things that you can learn about when a can was produced based on the kinds of closure it has, or different kinds of technical aspects on it, and he documented and researched all that. And when he passed away, the collection came to the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, and working with the folks in the library there at SOU, they completely digitized the collection, put it up online. Researchers around the world rely on this collection and add information to it now. And so it's a beautiful photograph, and I think it's a great representation of the kinds of information that folks share with each other at the State of Jefferson Historical Group meetings.
I limited myself to talking about the tobacco cans, but the fact is I see a Colt 45 can, there's at least one Budweiser can, a Carnation milk can, a Foster's can, a Band-Aid can. I remember those old metal ones. So Chelsea, where is this kept?
This is housed, we curate it at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. I still take it around to teach people. And in fact, this is old school public archaeology. The cans are literally in old Samsonite suitcases wrapped in old t-shirts and wool socks. It's wonderful. I'm going next week taking it up to the Dalles for a state training. But then it also, because now it is digitized, and Jim Rock literally wrote the books on can archaeology and how to date them and figure out what they are. And actually, he wrote the book on the state of Jefferson, too. So he is a great forefather of this archaeology that we're doing here. And we're happy to have his work, you know, taken to the next level of outreach, which is now the digital. People can access it from anywhere.
We have an email here from
Jim. And Jim Rock was at the very first State of Jefferson Historical Group meeting. He was one of the organizers of our group in 1976.
Well, I brought it together back then. Okay, you just had your 41st annual meeting last month. An email here from Mike in Medford, and Trudy, you're probably best positioned to answer this. He says, when hiking in Tahoe last year, I was surprised by the amount of State of Jefferson secession signs in the area. I assumed Jefferson didn't extend farther south than Redding. Did it pick up some counties recently? That again from Mike in Medford.
Okay, I'm kind of surprised about Tahoe.
Yeah, that's
but there have been various permutations of which states or which counties in the two states would comprise the state of Jefferson. Plumas County has been included sometimes. That's the farthest south I know. Mendocino County, you know, it gets pretty far south there in California, but I hadn't heard of Tahoe. So.
And generally no further north than Douglas County in Oregon, is that right?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
That's about, you know, Roseburg is kind of pushing it at the top as far as we know. Yeah.
Okay, but then here again, it's sort of a fluid idea, not one that ever really got to the point of paperwork and petitions and all that sort of thing. So State of Jefferson concept enduring. Since you're done with this year's meeting, and it looks like you try to alternate State of Jefferson historical group meetings on either side of the state line, so where does it look like the 42nd annual meeting is likely to be, Chelsea?
Klamath Falls.
Really?
So it's back up in our neck of the woods, and it's going to be, I don't think the exact location where it'll be hosted will be, but it'll probably be in the spring, and it's open to anybody that's interested in this topic, and it's a pretty informal and supportive group, and we just love to hear what people are up to. So,
all right, so that's the State of Jefferson Historical Group, and again, they've been very careful to refer to this as a historical group and not a secession group or anything like that. And here again, to give our perspective, the reason we call ourselves Jefferson Public Radio is because when there became more than just KSOR, we needed something other than just a set of call letters. And what would say best to the people who live here that were on both sides of the state line than to call ourselves Jefferson Public Radio? So there's our name and the Jefferson Exchange along with that. So this has been our Underground History segment, meeting with the folks from the State of Jefferson Historical Historical Group and celebrating the fact that the Oregon Historical Quarterly for one quarter only has been renamed the Jefferson Historical Quarterly. Eliza Canty Jones is the editor of the OHQ and the JHQ this time around. She joined us by phone from Portland. Trudy Vaughn, archaeologist and historian from Reading, thank you for joining us. And Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology and one of the co-hosts on Underground History, thanks again so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.